Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdraber. On today's show, how will connected vehicles interact with each other? You might have heard a recent episode I did with Brent Scorp from the Mercatus Center, where we talked about vehicle to infrastructure and how high-tech infrastructure built along highways and roads could be the future of autonomous vehicles and could serve as the main conduit for communication. But there's others in the space who think that the vehicles are actually going to have to interact with each other more, or there's just a lot of views about how to approach this very new and interesting area of autonomous vehicles. So joining me to discuss this is Mark Scribner, senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Mark, thanks for joining the show.
Great to be back, Evan.
So we've talked about the federal government's guidelines on autonomous vehicles before, and there's new ones now. The Federal Highway Administration just released guidelines on how connected vehicles should be interacting with the infrastructure, whereas previously they had released guidelines about how to get approval for an autonomous vehicle. And just to start out, what is your reaction, the reaction of your organization to these guidelines coming from the federal government? And I should mention that this is clearly from the Obama administration. It's not nearly that. That would be really crazy if Trump was able to turn around a completely different approach that quickly. So this is still the Obama administration on its way out. But what do you think of these guidelines?
So I think the problem with the Federal Highway Administration's vehicle to infrastructure guidance document it is similar to the problems with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's proposed rule on vehicle to vehicle communications, and that is it makes a lot of assumptions that aren't backed up by any sort of real evidence, and it assumes. Our biggest problem, the biggest problem with a single assumption is that it relies on or it proposes to rely on a technology known as dedicated short-range communications, it's a very controversial technology. The way that they're going about this, it risks locking in what many see as an obsolete or at the very least an inferior technology compared to, say, 5G that'll be deployed at around the same time, at least according to industry analysts in the federal government. I think a lot of it is that we risk locking in an obsolete inferior technology, and we're ignoring some of the superior technologies that are coming due.
Is this a short-term versus long-term debate, essentially? Because I think what Brent was suggesting on our episode was that we're going to need a lot of this infrastructure anyway for broadband. If we want to have better broadband in the future than when the government is digging up roads and doing construction projects along highways, that they should be putting in this smart infrastructure, which could also be used for vehicles, but could also just be used for broadband. And that might have a lot of short-term benefit, and that might be necessary in the short term for autonomous vehicles. But is it essentially an argument that let's think longer term, that eventually this kind of infrastructure to the vehicle is going to be outdated, and that once the vehicles get better at communicating with one another or with cellular networks, that that's a preferable solution? I mean, what is that the dilemma facing, you know, the Federal Highway Administration? Essentially, this vehicle to infrastructure looks really good in the short term, but vehicle to vehicle might be better long term.
So really, I think the problem is, dig once is a very separate issue from vehicle to infrastructure communications.
Right.
I think really the problem is who is going to pay for this infrastructure? And if we're going to create this massive new public infrastructure burden, you really need to figure out, what are our other priorities? We do have problems, particularly at the municipal level, with road maintenance backlogs and the like. A lot of people who work in this space, transportation analysts, I can think of David Levinson at the University of Minnesota, who's very skeptical of a lot of these smart city initiatives. It's basically planning overdrive. They have a lot of ideas, but not a lot of substance to back up, sort of the fundamentals, such as who is going to pay for this, and with respect to vehicle to vehicle. I think Yeah, absolutely. There's an issue of, well, why not potentially wait for cellular networks to upgrade to 5G? And then you have the private sector that's paying this, paying for this, rather than sticking it to the taxpayers. And like I said, to go back to the point of who is going to pay for this, assuming it's a public network, you know, there's a lot of issues with federal and state interaction and state and local interaction that would need to be resolved. Standards haven't been set. The guidance document that came out of Federal Highway doesn't really get at any of these issues, and it certainly doesn't address some of the issues that privacy advocates have raised about how we would deploy this technology. And then there's also unresolved cybersecurity issues, and those two problems are largely unaddressed in both this vehicle to infrastructure guidance doc that came out of Federal Highway, as well as the proposed rule from NHTSA on vehicle to vehicle communications.
So one of the issues here is life-saving technology getting delayed. And I've done shows with people about how privacy hysteria should not get in the way of autonomous vehicles, and cybersecurity hysteria should not get in the way of autonomous vehicles. And this notion that requiring prior approval and just letting thorny issues that don't have clear-cut solutions like privacy and cybersecurity, having those as prerequisites, you know, solving this in a lovely bipartisan way, is just going to delay the technology and that'll cost lives. And similarly, you could say that delaying the deployment of infrastructure or 5G could also cost lives. Isn't 5G just as daunting, if not more daunting, a challenge than DSRC? I mean, I've heard people who work in the space estimate that if it takes 70,000 cell phone towers to do a 4G nationwide network with small cells, each cell will cost less than a tower, but you're dealing with maybe 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, and you're dealing with local governments, hyper-local BS and red tape at three. I mean, is it fair to say that 5G is less of a challenge than DSRC?
Yes, because the towers right now exist. So unlike DSRC, whether that's V2V with roadside equipment, or you're talking about smart infrastructure V2I, those networks don't exist at all. So it's not a matter of upgrading networks, it's a matter of creating them in the first place. So that's why it is you're talking about governments deploying this infrastructure as opposed to the private sector. And I think most people would agree that the private sector, where it dominates an infrastructure sector, tends to outperform those infrastructure sectors dominated by government. Telecommunications versus highways, for instance. We have a lot more problems with our road networks than we have with our telecom networks. And I think that's largely because you have a private sector player, or you have private sector players in one that have the right incentives, and you have government that has all the wrong incentives.
Leave it to a libertarian to come on my show and argue against central planning in the form of smart cities, and you're going to suggest that something run by the private sector is better than something run by the government?
Get the hell out of here.
You're off. You're fired.
But I think one other point, and I think this gets lost in the debate a lot, and that's what we're talking about: connected vehicle technology. That is not the same as automated vehicle technology. And when you're talking about autonomous vehicles, so vehicles that are relying on onboard sensors and act independently, by definition, those are not connected vehicles. Now, you could have an automated connected vehicle, or a cooperative automated vehicle, as the term that's used. But autonomy, the notion that you're going to have independent vehicles able to react on their own without this kind of prodding from other roadway users or other pedestrians or what have you. I think we need to be clear that these are different technologies, and that's one risk that I see with the conflation, and also with this obsession with DSRC, is that I think we risk misallocating resources into what I think, and what many others think, is an obsolete inferior technology, away from a superior technology that could save a lot more lives, and that's automating the vehicles. So I think that's a major risk if we start having governments go down these wrong rabbit holes, the DSRC rabbit hole, which unfortunately they've been going down for the past 15 years, and there's a lot of inertia there. I think we really risk delaying the introduction and the uptake of these better technologies, namely automated vehicle technology that could save a lot more lives than a DSRC hazard warning. And that's important to keep in mind, too. The way that this is being contemplated right now by the federal government, automation at best is an afterthought. What we're talking about right now, currently with the technology that's being discussed at both NHTSA and Federal Highway, would be providing hazard warnings to drivers. So, for instance, if a car were to run a red light, another car or car equipped with this technology could receive an alert either from that other vehicle or from the stoplight, a smart stoplight or something, letting them know that other car has run the red light.
So they're not even necessarily thinking about autonomous. They're really talking short term. I mean, they're talking about things that could be used in just any car with an internet connection, essentially, and it doesn't necessarily have to be an autonomous vehicle. Is that a mistake in your view, that it's too short term and it's panicky almost, because we still have 30,000 people dying on the roads every year, which is kind of insane, and we wouldn't tolerate that under any other circumstances, any other form of transportation?
Well, you know, it's short-term thinking, but like all things, or like most things with the federal government, it takes a long time to get anything done. So, for instance, the technology that cars would need to be equipped with, that the proposed rule from NHTSA contemplates, they're not, you know, they're talking about, if they mandate this, that not applying to light-duty vehicles until perhaps model year 2020 or model year 2021, at which point we may have some of these more highly automated vehicles already being deployed. So, you know, yeah, it's short-term thinking, but simultaneously, we have some pretty long time frames for this deployment of this short-term thinking technology. So I think that's another problem, too. And I think that's just sort of inherent when you have the government rather than the private sector making these big decisions.
So spectrum's a huge issue here, because of course we're talking about the airwaves and communication, whether it's V2I or V2V. And we currently have these 4G LTE networks. Everyone's looking forward to 5G. But there's also this spectrum that's currently not being used, as far as I can tell. It was set aside in the 90s, correct me if I'm wrong, for the auto industry. And they have frankly done nothing with it. It is sitting there. And of course, the wireless carriers, the cable companies that have mesh Wi-Fi networks, anyone who's currently operating a network wants this spectrum because it's high value and it's just sitting there unused. Now, one of your objections to DSRC is that because that spectrum is so highly sought after, that it might not be available in the future. However, the auto industry has been very opposed to giving up the spectrum or sharing it at all. And in hearings, you've even seen industry representatives oppose studying whether the spectrum can be shared, not even putting out a rule that it must be shared. Just even exploring that is very offensive to these folks. So given that fierce opposition from the auto industry, is your concern unfounded that this spectrum will be handed over to cable companies and wireless carriers?
You know, I think there'd be more grounds to say that my concerns are unfounded if we didn't hear the exact same thing what we're hearing right now back in 2005. And back then they were saying this technology is right around the corner, we'll be deploying it imminently. And here we are today. They've been sitting on this spectrum block at the 5.9 gigahertz band for more than 15 years now. And it's immediately adjacent to the Uni 3 band. So obviously the developers of Wi-Fi products and the people who use them are very interested in expanding into this band.
And they have a good argument because it's not being used.
Right. And, you know, and research done on behalf of the cable industry by the Brattle Group has found that that NHTSA underestimated the spectrum opportunity cost by, you know, over $10 billion and all this. So, yeah, and I completely understand why the auto industry is doing this. I mean, they got this freebie, high-value block of spectrum. So I completely understand why they wouldn't want to give it up or hand it over to unlicensed folks when you know, this is their domain to play with. And it's not just, you know, the auto industry, I think they're not just looking at this from a safety perspective. And I think from their perspective, the most immediate gains they would see is the potential to use DSRC for infotainment and things like that. Other types of services, maybe not related to safety. And that's where you're seeing some groups are strongly opposing allowing the automakers from using DSRC for commercial purposes or for non-safety purposes. So yeah, I mean, it's a big messy debate that's been going on for years, and I don't see it going away anytime soon. And I think this is going to be an issue regardless of what comes out of the administration's or Congress's infrastructure package that we expect to see once they start doing budgets.
So other than the expense of DSRC, which you pointed out, and the prospect for the spectrum to be relinquished by the auto industry forcibly, and then you hand it over to companies that might actually do something with it, is there a technological reason that DSRC is worse? You know, just briefly, you know, we don't want to get too crazy with our engineering here, but is there a, you know, why should a listener think that vehicle to vehicle is superior to vehicle to infrastructure, assuming money is not part of the equation?
So they're not necessarily, V2V is not necessarily superior to V2I. And if they're both using DSRC, they both suffer from the same limitations. And it's not that DSRC is necessarily useless. It's just that it's, in order to get it to work in the way that we'd like to have it work, it's very expensive and requires massive infrastructure investments, billions of dollars in infrastructure investments before we'd start seeing any sort of significant crash reduction benefits or things like that. So, the question is really, if this is so expensive, are there alternatives that are cheaper, and could they be deployed more rapidly than a DSRC based system? So, and that's a, you know, what that right answer is, we don't know for sure, obviously. But I think letting the private sector sort this out, as opposed to the government imposing a one-size-fits-all standard, I think is the better course of action.
So these guidelines on DSRC, dedicated short-range communications, I think we used the full term earlier in the show, but if you just randomly came in halfway and you wonder what the hell we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes, it's dedicated short-range communication. Federal government wants to play an active role, but that came at the end of the Obama administration. We're now in the Trump era. These guidelines are not binding, so they don't even have to bother to undo them. I mean, do you see a big shift happening under Trump and the way that agencies like NHTSA, National Highway Safety, Traffic, blah, 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 and Federal Highway Administration, is there going to be a difference in the way they approach these issues?
Well, I think that it was a mistake for the Obama administration to release the V2V proposed rule from NHTSA earlier this month. Put out this guidance document last week because, you know, you have an administration now, the Trump administration, that is pledged to take a close look at the regulatory state. And I think, you know, I know they wanted to get this out before the next administration came in, and I understand that, but you basically put a target on the back of DSRC. And I know that there have been people, even within the Obama administration, there were people skeptical of DSRC, but I think you're likely to see the people who the Trump administration put into place at DOT, I think you're likely to see much more skepticism, particularly as it relates to the V2V mandate, which really none of this vehicle to infrastructure stuff that Federal Highway is talking about is going to work unless automakers install this technology. And frankly, they don't have an incentive to install it. So which is why they're proposing this mandate.
So for more on this topic, I've linked to Mark's blog post in the show notes for today. And Mark, do you have anything else you'd like to plug?
I encourage people to read, even though it's really long and boring, the V2V proposed rule, just to get sort of a sense of how micromanaging the agency is sort of approaching this topic.
So add that to your winter reading list, folks. Yeah. A federal regulatory document, which I assure you is as exciting as Mark has indicated with the enthusiasm in his voice when he made that recommendation. But we'll leave it here. Thanks for joining the show.
Hey, thank you.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. Let us know what you think. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. Maybe you have a nice federal document you'd like us to talk about on the show. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review because we'll help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.